If you look at the United States consumer right now, I mean, credit cards are just maxed out, and consumer sentiment is quite literally in the gutter.
Yeah, it really is.
Right. So by all traditional economic logic, retail real estate should be, you know, the most toxic asset class on the market. We should absolutely be seeing this massive wave of defaults.
But we aren't.
Exactly. We aren't. Instead, the data is telling this completely different story. Retail is currently, somehow, the safest major commercial real estate asset in the country right now.
It is, which is wild to think about.
So today, we are figuring out exactly why that is. Welcome to this deep dive brought to you by Eureka Business Group. They are the leading authority for commercial real estate brokerage in the Dallas-Fort Worth market, specifically specializing in retail.
And we are looking at a really massive stack of sources today for you. We've got trade press, official government economic data, industry reports spanning, well, the whole week of May 14th to May 22nd, 2026.
Yeah, and that also includes all this incredible on-the-ground intelligence gathered from the massive ICSC Las Vegas conference.
Right, and all this information, it paints a picture of a market that's just defined by deep, deep contradictions.
It really is. So our mission here is to decode what the national commercial real estate landscape actually means for retail properties in this weird environment. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we need to apply that directly to the Dallas-Fort Worth market.
Exactly. To give you a really clear view of how capital is actually moving and what operators are doing on the ground right now.
So to make sense of the local dynamics in a place like DFW, I feel like we have to start by establishing that national macroeconomic gravity, because the gravity pulling on the broader CRE market right now is intense, specifically when it comes to debt.
Oh, absolutely. The numbers we're seeing from BISNO, they show a severe freeze. I mean, overall, U.S. commercial real estate sales volume fell 33% year over year in April.
Wow, 33%.
Yeah, we are down to just $24.7 billion in total transaction volume.
And the mechanism behind that freeze, that's directly tied to the bond market, right?
Yeah, it is, yeah. So the 10-year Treasury yield recently pushed past that 4.5% threshold, and that is a really critical psychological and, well, mathematical ceiling for the industry.
Because real estate valuations are largely based on the spread, right? The spread between the risk-free rate of return, the Treasury yield, and the actual return a property generates.
Exactly. So when that risk-free rate climbs past 4.5%, the cost of borrowing money to buy real estate suddenly just wipes out the profit margins on most standard deals.
Which makes sense. Buyers just can't secure debt that makes financial sense.
Right. And sellers refuse to lower their prices to compensate for that. So transactions simply stop. They hit a wall.
And to compound that pressure, Bank of America Global Research issued this super blunt warning this week based on sticky inflation and that April jobs surprise.
Yeah, they're projecting we might not see Federal Reserve rate cuts until mid-2027.
Mid-2027. I mean, I'm looking at the consumer data here, and it just adds another layer to all this gloom. Reuters is reporting that consumer sentiment hit record lows in May.
Which is brutal.
Right. And the Census Bureau reported that April retail sales grew by 0.5%. But then TD Economics ran the numbers and pointed out that if you actually adjust for inflation,
the real spending fell.
Exactly. Real spending actually fell by 0.2%. Mm. So the actual volume of goods people are buying is essentially flat or even shrinking.
And plus, KPMG is warning that credit card delinquencies are now approaching levels we haven't seen since the Great Recession.
Right. So if the consumer is stressed and the cost of debt is freezing transactions everywhere, logic suggests retail property owners should be seriously struggling to pay their mortgages right now.
But here is the massive contradiction. It's found in the actual performance of the properties. Despite the high rates and all that consumer stress, retail real estate is holding the line better than almost anyone else.
I mean, looking at TREP's April data for commercial mortgage-backed securities, which, for context, are those massive pools of loans that finance commercial properties, it shows the overall delinquency rate. It's 7.54%.
Yeah, and the office sector is struggling way up at 11.69%.
But the retail CMBS delinquency rate is sitting at an incredibly low 6.31%. Retail is basically the cleanest major sector out there right now, right after industrial.
That is the core paradox of this whole thing.
Right. I'm looking at a consumer base with maxed out credit cards and flat inflation-adjusted spending. It's like, imagine a ship that somehow survived a massive hurricane like e-commerce and the pandemic, and it emerged completely leak-proof, while all these other sectors like office are taking on heavy water.
That's a really good way to look at it.
But how? How is retail debt performing so well when the underlying engine, you know, the consumer, is flashing all these red warning signs?
Well, there are two main structural mechanics at play here. The first is how inflation actually affects a landlord's revenue. Retail leases often include percentage rent clauses.
Meaning the landlord takes a cut of the gross sales above a certain threshold, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Because prices are higher due to inflation, the nominal sale figures are up, even if the actual number of items sold is flat. So this provides top-line growth for the property itself.
Oh, that makes total sense.
Yeah, but the second, and I'd say far more powerful mechanism, is the extreme lack of new retail supply.
Right, because the narrative for the last decade was the whole retail apocalypse thing. Developers simply stopped building shopping centers because everyone assumed Amazon and e-commerce would just wipe out physical stores entirely.
Exactly. The sector was essentially forced to right-size. A lot of that obsolete retail space was demolished, or it was repurposed into industrial fulfillment centers, or even turned into medical facilities.
So what remains today is highly functional.
Highly functional. And additionally, consumer spending has shifted heavily toward necessity-based retail.
Yeah.
Like, even when credit cards are totally maxed out, consumers still go to the grocery store, they still visit medical clinics, and they still buy discount goods.
And that completely insulates the landlords who own the centers housing those specific tenants. So this lack of supply acting as a shield, it brings us to the operational reality on the ground. I was reading Globe Estate's coverage of the massive ICSC Las Vegas 2026 conference, which, by the way, had over 25,000 attendees from across the industry, and they repeatedly used this term, frictional leasing.
Frictional leasing, yeah. It occurs in an environment where tenants have really strong balance sheets and aggressive expansion plans, but the physical space they actually need simply does not exist.
Because the national pipeline for new retail construction is just astonishingly thin right now.
It really is. Currently, there is only about 64.2 million square feet under construction across the entire United States. A year ago, that number was 70 million. The pipeline is actively shrinking.
But wait, if the demand from tenants is so intense, why aren't developers just rushing to build new strip centers to meet that demand? I mean, it seems like they're just leaving money on the table.
It all comes back to that 4.5% treasury yield and the overall cost of capital. Construction loans are just incredibly expensive right now.
Oh, right, the debt freeze.
Yeah, when you combine borrowing costs with high land prices, elevated labor wages, and really expensive materials, the math to build a new retail center simply doesn't work in most markets. Developers just cannot charge high enough rents to justify the cost of building the center from scratch.
So because developers are essentially sidelined, retailers are being forced into these highly selective expansion strategies. According to the ICSC panels, the focus has shifted almost entirely toward convenience formats.
Right. The most liquid, highly demanded retail spaces right now are those unanchored strip centers, drive-through heavy pad sites, and these small inline spaces ranging from like 1,500 to 3,500 square feet.
Which is pretty small.
It is, but that specific footprint is perfectly optimized for the dominant expansion sectors right now. Quick service restaurants, local medical clinics, which people are calling MedTail now, and boutique fitness concepts.
Right. They don't need massive 10,000 square foot boxes. They just need small, highly efficient spaces in really heavily trafficked areas to execute their labor models and handle delivery logistics. And to maximize the efficiency of those specific spaces, it looks like major landlords are heavily investing in AI. The panels at the ICSC PropTech sessions detailed how operators like Brixmor, Kimco, and Macerich are shifting AI from these like experimental pilot programs into heavy daily operations.
Yeah, it's fascinating. They're using AI for lease abstraction, which basically means deploying software to instantly digest and summarize these massive 100-page lease documents into actionable data points.
That's wild. Yeah. And the implications for net operating income, or NOI, which is the actual profit a property generates after operating expenses, are significant.
Oh, huge. Beyond just saving legal fees on lease reading, these landlords are using tools from companies like Placer.ai or Yardi for predictive site selection and tenant mix modeling.
Predictive site selection, how does that actually work?
Well, they use anonymized cell phone data to map exactly where a customer goes before and after visiting a certain store. So this allows landlords to mathematically prove that, say, placing a specific boutique fitness franchise next to an existing coffee shop will directly increase foot traffic for both tenants.
Wow, thereby increasing the overall value of the entire center.
Exactly. It's incredibly precise.
And that level of optimization is happening, while the old fear of this massive closure wave actually seems to be decelerating. I mean, the head of global research at CoreSite noted at the conference that they're forecasting 7,900 U.S. store closures for 2026.
Which sounds like a lot.
It does seem large, but it actually represents a 4.5% drop year over year.
Yeah.
And furthermore, Macy's just announced they are extending their 150-store closure program out through 2028. So landlords are being given this much longer runway to prepare for vacancies.
Yeah, that deceleration of closures really gives landlords breathing room. But the AI-driven tenant curation, that fundamentally changes how retail real estate operates going forward.
Right. So with physical space being so scarce and AI allowing for such hyper-specific predictive modeling, does this mean the old strategy of a brand just blindly opening 100 stores in a region just to see what sticks is completely dead?
The data strongly suggests that era is totally over. The ICSC panels confirmed that overall lease deal sizes have shrunk meaningfully, while tenants are demanding much, much higher quality space.
They don't want a massive fleet of mediocre locations anymore.
Exactly. They want dominant, highly visible spaces in proven centers. And landlords are no longer just trying to fill empty boxes either. They are actively curating a specific mix. The phrase they used at the conference was building a modern American wardrobe of tenants.
A modern American wardrobe. I like that.
Yeah. It is a highly defensive, targeted curation strategy.
So capital is actively seeking safety. And right now, safety looks like necessity-based retail in markets with growing populations that can, you know, absorb all this macroeconomic friction we talked about. Which brings our focus specifically to Texas, and more importantly, the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex.
Yes. The consensus across all the industry reports highlights DFW as the most consistently liquid retail market in the Sun Belt, and potentially the entire United States. Capital always flows to where the fundamentals are the strongest.
And the population growth in North Texas is obviously well documented, but I really want to understand the mechanics of the actual transactions happening right now. We saw several major trades just in this 1 week window.
What is it?
Like Curbline Properties, which is a publicly traded real estate investment trust. They acquired a 5-property DFW strip portfolio from N3 Real Estate. And these were centers in affluent suburban nodes like Flower Mound, Southlake, and Hudson Oaks.
Right. And Disney Investment Group also recapitalized Custer Park in Plano, which is this 117,000 square foot center shadow anchored by a Kroger grocery store.
So why are institutional buyers so aggressively pursuing these specific assets right now?
Well, it's because current owners in Texas rarely want to sell. You have to look at the capitalization rate or cap rate, which is a key metric in commercial real estate. It represents the expected annual return if you bought the property entirely in cash.
Right.
Because DFW retail is performing so exceptionally well, local owners are perfectly content to just hold their properties and collect reliable rent at their current cap rates. So when high-quality assets like grocery-anchored centers or really well-located strip malls do actually come to market, the pent-up institutional demand just drives premium pricing.
Makes sense. Now, I want to examine what is actually driving that underlying retail demand in DFW, because it obviously doesn't exist in a vacuum. It seems directly tied to the massive non-retail commercial growth happening there simultaneously.
Oh, it absolutely is. The mechanism basically operates like gravity. These massive corporate office and industrial developments act as the gravitational center, pulling residential rooftops toward them.
Right. And then retail acts as the secondary orbit,
yeah,
just setting up shop right at the doorstep of those newly created population hubs.
Precisely.
And the announcements from this single week illustrate that gravitational pull perfectly. I mean, a joint venture between Hillwood and Vanderbilt acquired the 1.4 million square foot Williams Square office campus in Las Colinas.
Yeah, and that secures thousands of daytime office workers who will anchor the daily retail trade in Irving.
Exactly. And on the industrial side, Celestica announced an $876 million electronics manufacturing campus at Alliance, Texas. Plus, Caprock Partners broke ground on the 250,000 square foot McKinney Air Business Park.
It's massive scale. And every time one of these employment hubs expands, the local demand for quick service restaurants, grocery stores, and medtail instantly scales up to match it.
But I'm looking at all this growth, and I have to ask, are Texas investors just wearing rose-colored glasses, ignoring the macroeconomic reality? Like, with the 10-year treasury yield past 4.5% freezing transactions in places like New York or San Francisco, is DFW somehow magically immune to the cost of debt?
That's a great question, but no, the laws of mathematics apply to DFW just like anywhere else. A developer or buyer in North Texas feels the exact same friction from a 6.5% mortgage rate as a buyer in California does.
Right, so why are they paying these premium prices?
because of the sheer velocity of job creation and population inflow in DFW, provides enough top-line revenue growth to overwrite that macro friction. Retailers absolutely must establish a presence where the actual spending power is migrating.
So it's the underlying, undeniable, fundamental demand that justifies those prices.
Exactly. The math still works in DFW because the denominator, the consumer base, is constantly expanding.
Okay, so having mapped out the macro headwinds, the national supply constraints, and this immense liquidity flowing into Dallas-Fort Worth, we need to transition into actionable strategy. Like, how does a listener, whether they're an operator, an institutional investor, or a tenant, actually use this data right now?
Well, the Eureka Business Group Playbook for 2026 and 2027 provides some very specific directives based on these conditions.
Let's hear them.
The most urgent strategic directive applies to property owners staring down loan maturities in 2026 or 2027. The data dictates a very clear path. Do not wait for cheaper money.
Because Bank of America is projecting no rate cuts until mid-2027. So waiting 2 years on a variable rate loan or just holding out hope for a dramatic drop in rates before a balloon payment is due, that's a massive balance sheet risk.
Exactly. Owners must initiate refinancing conversations immediately. The liquidity to execute those refinances is definitely available, but the source has shifted.
How so?
A new industry brief showed that non-bank lenders, which are often referred to as private credit, they captured more than half of all non-agency commercial real estate loan origination volume in the first quarter of 2026.
Oh, wow. Over half.
Yeah. Traditional banks are pulling back, but these private debt funds are stepping right into the void. And the CMBS market is also highly active for retail, specifically because that low 6.31% delinquency rate we talked about proves the sector is stable.
So the money is there, but owners have to secure it now at current pricing rather than gambling on the Fed cutting rates. What if you were on the other side of the table as a seller? Suppose a listener owns a fully leased grocery-anchored center or a convenience strip in a strong Texas submarket.
Cool. If you own that specific product type, you hold the ultimate leverage in this market. Institutional capital is starved for stabilized, necessity-based retail.
Are there any comps to show what kind of premium pricing is available?
Definitely. Just look at recent national comparables. Publix recently purchased its own real estate in Boynton Beach, Florida, paying over $436 per square foot.
Wow.
Yeah. And TA Realty paid over $522 per square foot for an infill retail center near Atlanta. Premium grocery-anchored and convenience assets located in dominant Sunbelt nodes are commanding absolute top-of-market valuations. If you hold this asset class, you have the pricing power.
And what about for the tenant representation brokers listening?
For them, the strategy requires incredible focus. The data points aggressively toward those 1,500 to 3,500 square foot spaces. Brokers should be actively securing sites for fitness, beauty, pet services, and medtail concepts.
Right, because that specific footprint, combined with those experiential uses, is where the highest leasing velocity and the highest probability of actually closing deals exist today.
Exactly. And the strategy for developers is equally clear. The national pipeline is starved for supply, as we discussed. However, retail vacancy in Dallas-Fort Worth is sitting at an incredibly tight 5.4%.
That is tight.
Very. Because of this dynamic, well-located, ground-up, merchant-build retail projects in North Texas are positioned to be among the highest-yielding commercial real estate investments over the next 24 months.
And merchant-build, that implies developing a property with the explicit goal of leasing it up and immediately selling it.
Right. If a developer can navigate the high construction debt on the front end, the eventual exit valuation will heavily reward that risk because the institutional buyers are just waiting to purchase the finished product.
Okay, but I want to look at the downside risk for a second. If a landlord is operating a center and finds out that a major anchor like Macy's is closing, you know, as part of their corporate restructuring, or a large big box retailer files for bankruptcy, the historical reaction to that would be sheer panic.
Right.
So is losing an anchor tenant still a disaster right now, or does the lack of overall supply change that equation?
In a market constrained by essentially zero new construction, losing an obsolete anchor tenant is often a massive disguised opportunity.
Really? A disguised blessing?
Yeah. Historically, losing a 100,000 square foot tenant was a crisis because replacing that rental income took years. But today, landlords who secure the first mover advantage can take back that large box, subdivide the space, and retenant it at significantly higher market rents.
Wow, see.
They can bring in experiential concepts, high-end big box fitness operators like Equinox or Lifetime, or highly profitable off-price retailers. By modernizing that tenant mix, the landlord effectively resets the net operating income and establishes a much higher valuation rung for the entire property.
That makes a lot of sense. So to summarize this whole landscape for you, the macroeconomic winds are severe right now. The cost of debt is high, transaction volume is down 33%, and the consumer is showing some really deep signs of fatigue.
But despite all that...
Right, despite all that, the retail real estate sector has engineered itself into the safest harbor in commercial real estate, completely insulated by this historic lack of new construction and a structural pivot toward necessity-based spending.
And within that national safe harbor, Dallas-Fort Worth operates as the premier fortress.
Exactly. The sheer volume of corporate relocations and population growth ensures that DFW retail remains highly liquid, highly desirable, and mathematically sound. And Eureka Business Group is uniquely positioned to help investors, landlords, and tenants execute transactions and capitalize on this specific environment.
Absolutely. Though, before we conclude, there is one final data point from our sources that really merits deeper consideration.
Oh.
The National Association of Home Builders issued a report detailing severe pressure on mixed-use multifamily developments. You know, those large apartment buildings with retail spaces built right into the ground floor.
Oh, right. The report highlights how exploding insurance premiums and sustained high interest rates are really squeezing the proformas, the underlying financial models, on those massive mixed-use projects.
Yeah, the math on those developments is becoming untenable in a lot of markets. So if the financial models for mixed-use residential over retail stop making sense, we really have to consider the secondary effects on retail development.
Like, will we see a sudden resurgence of developers abandoning the mixed-use concept entirely?
Exactly. Will they revert to building pure, single-story, net-lease, retail strip centers simply because the construction costs and insurance profiles are just easier to finance?
That is a fascinating thought, because if capital constraints force developers to abandon those dense mixed-use projects in favor of traditional single-story retail, the physical layout of the DFW suburbs could look very, very different a decade from now than what urban planners are currently projecting.
It's definitely a dynamic to watch closely.
Well, gives you something to mull over. Thank you for taking this deep dive with us today. We invite you to reach out to Eureka Business Group to turn these market mechanics into actionable strategy. Because when the macroeconomic dashboard is flashing warning signs, having an expert guide who understands the structural safety of DFW retail allows you to navigate the storm and really capitalize on liquidity.